I Eat Green with Bhavani, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Wednesday on the Progressive Radio Network. You're listening to Bhavani on IE Green, and I'm here every Wednesday with you to explore the connections between our industrial agriculture and what we can do about it and how we can make choices with every dollar we spend and help to change the world. So anyway, I am so glad you're joining me today. I have a very exciting show. I have a guest with me. His name is John Vishnauskas, and he was he's from Cleveland, Ohio, and he runs a food pantry that is geared for the elderly. It's exclusively for senior citizens who are in threat of not having enough to eat. And so the program he's set up is really, really incredible and really making a difference in so many people's lives. So I'm really happy to have him on, and he'll be with us in a little while. But first, I just want to talk a little bit about you, about what's going on in my world, and share a recipe with you. And then we'll invite John on. So this weekend, I actually had the privilege of seeing a demonstration by Amanda Cohen. She is the chef and owner of a restaurant called Dirt Candy on the Lower East Side in Manhattan. And it was just so nice to see a vegetarian chef who's really having fun with what she's doing. It was very refreshing. It was delicious and comfort food. It wasn't all super healthy, but it was healthy because it was, you know, organic, good quality ingredients. But as she said, you know, she tries to have so many different textures in the foods that she's creating so that you have the crunch, you have the color, you have the creaminess, you have the salt. And it was just really fun to watch her at work. And I'm looking forward to actually getting into the restaurant. They only have 18 seats, so you really do need to make a reservation. And I know I've tried and have not gotten in. So if you get a chance to check out that restaurant, I recommend it. This weekend, actually this past Thursday, we showed the movie at the Cinema Arts Center on Long Island called The Dark Side of Chocolate. And it was an amazing, eye-opening movie for me. Here I am, someone very involved in sustainable agriculture and the food movement, and I was not aware of the child trafficking that goes on around the production of the chocolate I eat. And it was really, really mind-boggling. So I recommend you all look into trying to catch that a screening of The Dark Side of Chocolate. You can also just go on to the website, you know, Google Dark Side of Chocolate, and see a little trailer of it. But think about next time that you're buying chocolate. I know I wish I had told everybody this before Valentine's Day. That the next time you're purchasing chocolate, make sure it's fair trade or direct trade or organic, and then you know you're not participating in the trafficking of children to produce cheap chocolate. So that was really eye-opening. Another organization that is having a large meeting tonight on Long Island is Food Not Bombs. And they're a great organization that serves food that they gather from restaurants and stores and serve to the hungry and the homeless. And they are there rain or shine, 7 days a week in many different locations. And I believe they're a national organization, so there's a local chapter here, but I think you can find them wherever you're living. Food Not Bombs. And they are proponents of veganism, so they do not serve meat or dairy. So everything that they're serving is fresh fruits and vegetables, what so many of the people who are hungry do not have enough of. So it's really a great organization if you want to get involved with them. Another couple exciting things going on, March 4th, Sustainable Long Island is having a conference called Rally for Resources. And the keynote speaker at this conference is Woody Tash, who wrote the book Slow Money. And the premise around his book is that people should be investing in local agriculture, and ideally within a 50-mile radius of where you live. And you can just imagine if everybody was investing in their own home front, how that would have a positive effect on the economy as well as on our food system. So it should be a great conference. It's March 4th, and it's about rallying for resources, trying to get through the red tape to try to get projects going on Long Island. The other conference is the first ever Long Island Small Farm Summit. And I'm really excited about this because as the planning happens, I realize we really do have a very vibrant farm community on Long Island, a group of many people that are promoting sustainable agricultural practices and encouraging people to grow vegetables and support our local economy with that. So that's a Small Farm Summit. April 15th, it's at SUNY Old Westbury. The college is not on break. I actually thought they were, but so they're in session at the same time, but it should be a great conference. Joel Salatin is the keynote speaker. And for those of you that don't know Joe Salatin, you can Google him as well. He is the farmer/rancher that was in the movie Food, Inc. and is talked about in Michael Pollan's books. So that's another really wonderful conference that is going to be happening. So it's very exciting to be a part of this food movement here in New York. And as I said, I'll be inviting John on, who's doing his food movement in Cleveland, Ohio. And I've had people on from Detroit, Michigan, and people on from all over. So it's really exciting as we connect people from around the country who are all working to bring local, sustainable practices into our circle. And so I encourage all of you to really get on board and, you know, see what you can do and volunteer somewhere. Get involved, because it's going to take all of us to make our mark and to compete with the large food corporations. I don't know if you all saw in the New York Times this week, they talked about Tyson Poultry and how the inspectors, two veterinarians down in Mexico, were being paid off. And so even horrible meat as it is already is getting through even worse. I mean, who knows what they were paid off for? I mean, it didn't really specify. I think it's, you know, not allowed, they weren't allowed to specify, but use your imagination. You can imagine what kind of things they were letting slide. So, you know, meat that is not produced in a conscious way where you do not know the farmer, you do not know how the animals are being treated, is not the meat you want to eat, because even the meat that is raised in a horrible way is even worse than you think. So really pay attention to where your food's coming from. That being said, I want to share a recipe with you. I have a great recipe for seitan shepherd's pie. This is one of my kids' favorite dishes. You know, it looks like a regular shepherd's pie, and it's, you know, saucy, and it has the potatoes on top, and it's really comfort food on these cold days. Although, I heard we're supposed to get a nice warm day on Friday, 60 degrees, so it's the time to start preparing my soil for the spring. I can't wait. Okay, so seitan shepherd's pie, this is what you need. You want to get two packages of seitan. Each of the packages are 8 ounces, so it's about a pound of seitan. Or you can, of course, make your own seitan. I've given that recipe, so you can go onto the Progressive Radio Network website and download the recipe for seitan if you don't have one. One onion, chopped, 2 to 4 carrots, and you want to cut those into wedges. Instead of just slicing them, I like to cut my carrots when I'm making a stew on the angle, and then I roll the carrot halfway and cut it again on the angle, so that every time I'm rolling the carrot a half turn and cutting it on an angle, I am making a faceted piece of carrot, and it just releases so much energy and love into the food. And, you know, that's something that I don't talk about often, but you can't underplay the importance of putting that love for the people you're cooking for into your food and imbuing the food with love. It really makes it so much more healing, and you can taste it. You can taste the love in food. I really believe that. So you want about 1 pound of mushrooms, any choice of mushrooms you'd like, white mushrooms, shiitake mushrooms, portobello mushrooms, or a combination of, and you can slice them. 2 yellow squashes, 1 butternut squash, peeled and cut up into squares, 2 red or yellow peppers. They're great for color. Peppers, you know, I love to get everything organic, but peppers are one vegetable that you really do want to try to get organic. You know, in that list where they say the 10 most important vegetables to get organic, peppers are on that list. A head of broccoli, 4 parsnips, 1/2 of a small napa cabbage, and then any other vegetables you like. And they're interchangeable. You know, broccoli, of course, cauliflower, just a bunch of vegetables. So whatever you have in the house is fine. Tamari, 4 cloves of garlic, a package of frozen peas, 1-inch piece of ginger, grated, 1/4 cup of nutritional yeast. And nutritional yeast I use often to make my sauces a little thicker and creamier, and also to, you know, enhance the vitamins in the dish. So there's a lot of B vitamins in nutritional yeast. And do not mistake it for brewer's yeast. It's very different. 2 tablespoons of aji marin, which is sweet rice wine, 1 cup of water, olive oil for sautéing, and 3 pounds of potatoes, russet, Idaho, red, Yukon gold, whatever you'd like is fine. You're going to cut them into large chunks and set up a pot of boiling water to boil the potatoes for making mashed potatoes, and put a little salt into that water, okay? Meanwhile, while you have the water on to boil, you want to, in another large stock pot, you want to saute some onions and carrots in a little olive oil and let them go for about 5 minutes on medium heat. Add the garlic and ginger and let that go for a few more minutes. Then add the butternut squash and the parsnips. So these are all the vegetables that are the root vegetables, and they take a little longer to cook, so you want to give them a 10-minute head start, okay? Then you are going to, when the water boils, you're going to add the potatoes, and you're going to cook those till soft. And when they're ready, you're going to drain them and put them into a large bowl. You're going to add 1/2 stick of butter to the potatoes. And you want to saute some garlic so that it gets soft. You can actually saute the garlic in the butter before adding it to the potatoes. But be careful not to let it burn. And using a potato masher, you're going to mash the potatoes, add the garlic butter. You're going to add 1/2 cup of sour cream, some warmed milk, about 1/2 cup, and use the potato masher to mash it. For those of you that do not know, you cannot really whip potatoes. It's so easy to over-whip them, and they turn pasty. So you have to be really careful about that. And I actually don't peel my potatoes. I just wash them and scrub them well, but I actually like the peels in the potatoes. If you don't, or you have kids that won't like little dark spots, feel free to take them out. And also, if you want to make the garlic mashed potatoes dairy-free, that's very easy to do. Instead of the butter and the sour cream and the milk, you're going to use 1 cup of coconut oil. I'm sorry, 1 cup of coconut milk and 1/4 cup of olive oil, and saute the garlic in the olive oil. Add that to the mashed potatoes, add 1 cup of coconut milk, and just mash them as regular. And then, of course, salt and pepper the garlic potatoes. And you can just set those aside And then let's go back to the vegetables that are sauteing in this stock pot. After 10 minutes, at this point, you're going to add the rest of the vegetables that you're going to use, the broccoli, the mushrooms, the peppers, the squash, and any other vegetables that you want. Saute them for just a few more minutes, then add some water, about a cup of water, okay? You can also add the nutritional yeast, the mirin, and the tamari at this time. Cut the seitan up into chunks, unless you got it already cut up that way. You're going to add the seitan to the stock pot and the frozen peas and cook for about another 10 minutes so that all the flavors start to come together. And then you're going to transfer these vegetables into like a clay roasting pan that you can put into the oven. You will have wanted to preheat the oven at 375. Transfer the vegetables into the casserole pan that you're going to be using. And then take the mashed potatoes, and I actually, instead of putting the mashed potatoes all on top of the whole casserole, I like to make a circle of the mashed potatoes, just go around the border and leave a little air pocket in the center. And it's just for decoration. You can also put parsley in the mashed potatoes. That's really nice to have little green in the parsley, in the potatoes, if you'd like. So you put the mashed potatoes all the way on the top. You can brush them with a little egg wash so that they'll get shiny. And if you're not eating egg, you can brush it with a little bit of olive oil. And form little peaks with the mashed potatoes. I use my hand. You can also fork and create little peaks on the potatoes. And then bake it in the oven for about a half an hour till the peaks of the potatoes get really golden brown and look beautiful. When you pull it out, sprinkle it with a little bit of parsley for garnish. And that is it. And, of course, I didn't say this, but when you're cooking the shepherd's pie, if you want to put in a couple sprigs of rosemary or thyme, some sage, fresh herbs are always nice to add to stews like this. So, you know, get familiar with the different flavors from each of these herbs and feel free to add the herb of your choice. Okay? And that is it. And then pull it out of the oven, and you have a delicious all-in-one dish. It's like a, you know, a pot pie. So that's it for my shepherd's pie. And now I'd like to, I'm sorry that took a long time, I'd like to invite John Vichnauskas on to talk about the All Faiths Pantry that he's running in Ohio. John, are you there?
I am. Hi, Bhavani.
Hi, John. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. So I'm so glad you're able to join us. I got a little carried away with the recipe there, so I realized.
I took notes.
It took a little long, and I had a lot of announcements to share with everyone, too. But, you know, you've been in Ohio now for about 12 years, but you were raised there. Is that right?
Yeah, I was raised here, and after college graduation, I moved away for, I guess, 17 years. I lived mostly in New Mexico, but I traveled a lot in those days. That was my pre-fatherhood days when extensive travel was an option. But, yeah, now I'm back in Cleveland, I think, since 99.
Uh-huh. And is that when you started the All Faiths Pantry?
Well, that's when one fortuitous day I happened to be driving around in downtown Cleveland, and I saw the Cleveland Food Bank, and I thought, I've heard of food banking. That's interesting to me. And I gave a call, and it started me down this road, which doesn't seem to have an end in sight. I, you know, called to be a volunteer there, and very quickly I was an employee there, and it sort of got me going in food banking. I was the inventory coordinator there for a little bit, and after that I started programs as an agency.
Uh-huh. But the All Faiths Pantry is different than a food bank, correct?
Yeah, the All Faiths Pantry is a member agency of the Cleveland Food Bank. The food bank, the Cleveland Food Bank being a really excellent food bank, the food bank being a place where agencies such as ours sources their food. The food bank doesn't give food to individuals, but to agencies and programs such as ours that do the direct distribution.
Uh-huh.
And
so what's the vision of All Faiths Pantry?
Well, the vision of All Faiths Pantry is an American cultural normalcy where diverse groups of people and individuals come together to feed those people not being served by other emergency food programs, most especially seniors and other low mobility people.
Uh-huh.
So in the way, you know, everyone knows about the Meals on Wheels model or even Toys for Tots. And
right.
If you've got that idea in your mind, you could Google it or you could follow that trail, and there's a model there and there are precedents there. So we're trying to create a model of how, you know, seniors most especially and other folks who can't really get out of the house to go to emergency food programs can be fed.
So is All Faiths Pantry a delivery service similar to Meals on Wheels?
It is. We deliver 100% of our food.
Uh-huh.
And it's different from Meals on Wheels in that the food comes at no cost to the recipients. The clients pay nothing, unlike Meals on Wheels.
Uh-huh.
And also in that we are bringing grocery items. So it's really about helping people maintain their independence, and it's really for people who either cook for themselves or have people who cook for them in their home, where Meals on Wheels are prepared foods that come, you know, five lunches a week. All Faiths Pantry brings once a month, it's supposed to be a minimum of 3 days food, but really it tends to be quite a bit more than that, most especially because a lot of our clients are burning calories pretty slow, so it goes a long way.
And you deliver it just one time per month?
Yeah, once a month. Right now, our direct service is to about 300 individual homes containing about 400 individuals. So they're by far mostly single-person households. But increasingly, we're seeing where, in the case of seniors living on Social Security, sometimes less than $1,000 a month, they have that stability which and the frugality and budgeting ability that they're keeping a roof over their head, and so their adult kids are having to move back, and sometimes with their kids, so sometimes grandma's Social Security is, you know, housing three generations. So
wow.
In that way, you know, not all of our households are single family households, single-person households, but the vast majority of them are old folks living by themselves. So.
Uh-huh. And do you spread it out so that you have your organizations delivering, let's say, to 100 homes per week, and that each recipient gets it once a month, or do you try to do it all together where you're really just mobilizing once a month?
No. I have over 20 delivery teams now. And that's kind of the cornerstone of our program, and one of the collateral advantages of our model, that really the volunteers get so much out of it. I heard a quote from the founder of the Ursuline nuns recently, and these aren't the exact words, but the paraphrase was that our need to serve is greater than the sum of the need to be served by all those we serve. You know, the volunteers really get so much out of it because our model is where a team, a mother and son, a husband and wife, a couple of girlfriends, whatever it is, go to the same half dozen or maybe as many as 10 people every month. So they kind of build a relationship, and very quickly, the idea that this is charity food or you are part of a hunger program quickly goes away. It's just, hi, this is Bhavani. John and I would like to come deliver your groceries tomorrow. Will you be home?
Uh-huh.
And it just becomes very, you know, personal interchange. And for a lot of seniors, there's just no way that they're going to go to a strange church, get on public transportation, and wait in a room, you know, in what they consider a breadline. They just, for the sake of pride, aren't going to do that, and we'll go without instead. And so, you know, some of our seniors are mobile, but again, they're not going to take advantage of other emergency food programs. And another significant minority of our clients are folks who aren't yet 60, but are just homebound either from a temporary or, you know, a permanent impairment of some type. So we our outreach is both to seniors and to mobility impaired people.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's so nice. And so how many bags of groceries do people usually get?
It tends to be, you know, my mistake is I often, like, overpack them. So I probably should make fewer and not so full. I mean, more and not so full, but it tends to be like 25 or 30 pounds of groceries, a couple of good bags.
Good. And how are they as far as fresh fruits and vegetables?
Well, that's a nice thing about the Cleveland Food Bank, too, that we, besides the non-perishables that we get from the USDA and from manufacturers who donate close dated and mislabeled things to the food bank. We get a lot of food from Ohio farmers. There's a program called the Ohio Food Purchase Program, and the state buys, you know, all the apples that are too small or too big, or all the potatoes that are misshapen for a machine to wash. And so in that way, we get a lot of Ohio produce, most especially. Our challenge right now is refrigerator space. So a lot of times I can't get the most perishable things. You know, if it's avocados or bananas, typically they're ready to eat. So I can only really get what's going to go out
right
that
away
day or something. But things like, you know, potatoes and onions and cabbage and so many other things that'll stay well at room temperature, I'm able to stock up, you know, for a week or two and continuously give them. We tend to kind of recover in the first week of the month, and I try and get the volunteers to not wait until the last week of the month, because in the last week I'm really trying to catch up with whoever got missed and people who aren't on a route yet.
So does All Faith Pantry actually have a location, or are you kind of picking things up and distributing, you know, from someone's home?
Oh, no. We have a mailing address, you know, for, you know, which is for corporate consistency, which has remained the same. We've had a couple of warehouse locations, but we do rent a small warehouse, and that's how we're able to really source the food at no cost. The Cleveland Food Bank just being so fantastic, we just get, you know, weekly or every other week what's available, and can be used that, you know, in a quantity that I can use within a few months. And in that way, it's not as if, you know, everyone's going to get 3 months worth of canned peas today. It's I get canned peas enough that we'll have them for a few months. And so as I pick up a couple few times a month, I'm able to kind of keep a variety of food. So if I give, say, 20 or 25 different items, there's a, you know, there are no two items alike. So there's a great variety of food.
Mm-hmm. And where do you get all your volunteers?
Well, most of our volunteers are now coming by word of mouth. You know, the word is out about us. They hear from other people. But there are a couple of schools that refer volunteers to us. you know, through all of our media attention, the local media has been very interested in us and very generous towards us. We also get a lot of people from different churches. You know, we are All Faiths Pantry, and that's part of our model, that we're trying to get people who, you know, might not agree theologically. You know, our Episcopalian volunteers and our Southern Baptist volunteers are probably never going to agree on translating the Book of Revelation, but they both agree that, you know, an elderly woman should get a bag of beans. And so that's another collateral benefit of our model, that we're bringing people together who might not normally have anything to do with each other. And we also have plenty of unchurched people and even anti-religious people. And when they, you know, come together and, you know, deliver food, a lot of times they realize that, you know, neither one of them really has horns and neither one of them are really such terrible people. And so, you know, just like the volunteers are getting a big benefit from it generally, also, you know, people are really starting to see that, you know, there is power in our diversity, and, you know, that, you know, to Abrahamic person, they might see that, you know, a Buddhist or a Hindu is actually, you know, a human like themselves with a lot of the same motivations and goodwill that, that they have, and vice versa. So All Faiths Pantry is, you know, really modeling that as well. And we are really trying to be All Faiths Pantry.
So your recipients also are all faiths, I would assume.
They certainly are. They certainly are. And I wanted to say, besides the individual homes that we go to, a lot of seniors and low-income folks are concentrated in HUD-subsidized buildings and in Cleveland, what are called CMHA buildings, you know, you could say the projects. And so that's probably 40% of our clients who we deliver in a different way, not by going to a neighborhood and going to five or six houses, but like, for instance, today we went to a HUD building where we brought literally a ton of food, and we put roller tracks down, and several seniors who live there made up the bags, and, you know, 80 people came down to the activity room with their walkers and electric chairs and, you know, left with their bag of groceries. So we really have, in a way, two models, one for people who are clustered together and another for people who are, you know, in their standalone homes.
And where do you get most of your funding? Do you have to do fundraisers? Or
yeah,
do you...
we certainly do have to do fundraisers. We are a nonprofit corporation, so, you know, we certainly, you know, survive largely on $10 and $15 and $20 donations that come from individuals. But we also write grants, you know, as a 501c3, we're able to get funding from, for instance, the Episcopal Diocese of Ohio has been very generous to us. The Parma Hospital Community Health Foundation, Parma being the big suburb we serve, has given us money. So we write grants. I have a few outstanding grant requests right now. So that's something we do. We do fundraisers. We've got a fundraiser coming up in downtown Cleveland this weekend at a local tavern, the Blind Pig. We've had a lot of reggae benefits, and we've had a lot of yoga for All Faiths Pantry benefits, where yoga teachers will donate their proceeds of their community classes. I had a meditation teacher hand me a little a wad of currency today. She began a donation-based class here in Cleveland and is giving all the proceeds to All Faiths Pantry. So we've kind of really nurtured a relationship with the reggae community in Cleveland and the yoga community both. Excuse me.
Well, that sounds great. We're going to take a few minute break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about some of the other projects you're doing and see how some of my listeners might be able to help you.
Super.
Okay. Talk to you in a few.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one form that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
Every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, join the founders of the Godspeed Institute for Spiritual Learning, Carol and Michael Hallenbeck, for Godspeed, an enlightening and informative journey into the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Through conversations with experts worldwide, this weekly live call-in program is an on-air classroom aimed at helping listeners gain exposure to and insight into religious and spiritual practices around the world. Every Sunday, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Mike Adams, the editor-in-chief and key writer of naturalnews.com and co-founder of the nonprofit site consumerwellness.org. I'll be starting a special segment on the Progressive Radio Network called The Health Ranger with Mike Adams. I'll be interviewing everyone from Dr. Jane Goodall to Suzanne Summers. Find out the latest in natural healing news and easy ways to live a healthier and more holistic lifestyle. So tune in on Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern every week on the Progressive Radio Network to hear The Health Ranger with Mike Adams.
Is someone driving you crazy? Do you have a cheating boyfriend or girlfriend? An ex you can't let go of? An obnoxious boss? Adult kids who won't listen? I'm Hollis Polk, and I fix relationship problems. Your life, your relationship with Hollis Polk offers you practical solutions for all sorts of people problems. Listen and call in Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, or download the podcast at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Listening to Bhavani, and I'd like to welcome you every Wednesday on the Progressive Radio Network to join me for my show called I Eat Green, where every Wednesday we will talk about eating healthy and eating sustainably for our planet. So join me every Wednesday from 5 to 6.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is John Vishnauskas, who is the founder of the All Faiths Pantry in Cleveland, Ohio. And the work he's doing is really great, and it's actually a model that, you know, many people could follow in other parts of the country. So I want to welcome him back. John, are you there?
I am, thank you.
You know, I'd like to ask you, how can other people set a program up like this? Like, what did you have to do to go through to actually get it off the ground? Because it seems very doable for people to follow this model and help. Because, you know, one thing I've been very involved in New York is taking a look at food equity issues and food security. And the people that are food insecure are women, children, and the elderly. Those are the those are the big pockets of groups that are underserved. And, you know, I think the elderly probably even more so than the women and children. I mean, the women and children are out there and are seen. I think very often the elderly are, you know, are cooped up in their homes and people aren't aware of it. Well, and one of the things that I really love about your model is, as you were saying, when the volunteers go to visit in the homes, they'd start to develop a relationship, and how wonderful that must be for the recipient to have company.
Well, I keep saying we're really delivering love disguised as food. You know, it's really an exchange of energy that's beyond food, and it's a situation where you get more than you think going into it. You know. It's an incredibly spiritual exchange to feed people, and it's amazing how that person really can become a real part of your family through sharing and through feeding them. You know, right now we're seeing sort of the end of the greatest generation, as it's called, the people who really built the country. We've got plenty of clients in their 80s and even 90s, and those folks, you know, they might make $900 a month, but they want to give us $3, you know, and if they can't give us $3, then they say, okay, I'll give you $5 next month, and they budget and they live within their means. But this year we're seeing the silver tsunami, as it's called, the baby boom starting, you know, the other side of 65, and it's just going to be an incredible, incredible phenomena, seniors, you know, retiring into poverty, because a lot of people my age and, you know, around my age, I'm in my early 50s, you know, if they make $100,000, they spend $120,000. So
right.
If, you know, they're getting $900 Social Security, they're not making it. And so, you know, this is something we're really trying to get ahead of as a model, because this is a huge demographic challenge, you know, coming right up, which is beginning now. You know, the folks in their 80s and 90s, a lot of times they think they shouldn't take food from us because they just sent money to Haiti, or because, you know, they remember Poland was worse, or the South was really tough, or even the 30s
right.
were bad. But, you know, people in their 50s, you know, a lot of times they have the attitude that, you know, gee, you know, someone should be taking care of me, you know, rather than thinking in terms of, you know, I should save what I have to help other people. And so we're really trying to get this established and get it sustainable before, you know, I'd like to retire someday, you know, maybe in 15, 20 years. And so, you know, it is something that, like Meals on Wheels or like Toys for Tots or like so many other programs, really needs to become established as an idea. I don't care if people call it All Faith's Pantry or what they call it, but ours is really a model that we're hoping people will adapt and adopt. We're very happy to work with and consult with anybody free of charge. They could contact us through our website at allfaithspantry.org. They could write me at AFPNOW, that's AFPNOW at gmail.com. They could like us on Facebook. You know, you can get a hold of us if you want. And we're happy to help people go through the process of starting a program or adding a delivery program to someone else's existing emergency program, because anyone who has an emergency food program knows that these are the people who aren't being served, the seniors and the low mobility people. So there are a lot of established programs that would be happy to have you join on with this added service, because they know there are people who, you know, they're not going to take their quad cane out on the ice, or
right,
or their chair, you know, just doesn't make it into the church basement, you know.
Right, and then they have to stand, in a lot of those places, they're standing outside for hours online. And they just can't struggle with the cold.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's for me, I get ready to go, I put on my jacket, I grab my keys, and I go. But for a lot of our clients, it's a lot of anticipation, and it's a lot of work to get it together, to get outside. And if you've got to navigate public transportation, and then you've got to carry the stuff home, I move, 3-4 tons of food, a month myself personally, lift it, spin it around, put it back, But for these folks, walking home with 25 pounds of food or getting on the bus with 25, 30 pounds of food, it's pretty near impossible. So it's, something that can be started in such a modest way. All Faith's Pantry, we started in 06, but for 4 years, from 00 to 04, I ran a program very similarly for the Greater Cleveland Shiva Vishnu Temple, where I was a very rare non-Indian, but we delivered to sometimes as few as a half a dozen, sometimes as many as two dozen people, again, as an agency of the food bank, but we ran on a zero budget. And it was just, very consistent. It was a small thing, but it was a consistent thing. And let me tell you, it meant a lot to those people.
Yeah.
Our program certainly could be adapted and adopted. There is a way to proceed. You can find your local food bank through Feeding America. Feeding America is the national umbrella of food banks. They could direct you to the food bank in your area. Your local food bank can direct you to local agencies in your neighborhood. If you have a church or you have some civic organization you're working with, you're tax exempt, you could become an agency of your local food bank.
Right. Well, I've also plugged into different faith-based organizations for volunteers, because I do a lot of work with the River Fund. Do you know of them? They're in New York.
You did mention them to me, yes.
Yeah, and the gentleman, I've had him on my radio show too, Durgadas, who runs the program. It's a huge food bank, and they also give out food stamps and things like that, but people have to go there. And I, as we're talking, my head is spinning because I'm thinking, I bet that they have clients who can't get there, and that, they're in Queens, so they probably don't have many volunteers. I don't think any of their volunteers, I know them, I don't think any of their volunteers other than the ones that I bring him actually have cars and drive.
Uh-huh.
I'm bringing people from the suburbs to him in Queens, but in Queens, the volunteers he has are people that live there who don't have cars. So I'm sure he has clients who can't get out, especially in the bad weather, and might love some help in delivering to them.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And also, the carbon footprint is lessened. Rather than, for instance, if those 80-some people we fed this morning at Spring Hill Villa, if they had to each individually get a ride or get on the bus and go to a hunger program, that would have eaten up a lot more fuel than us arriving with that ton of food and giving it all to them in one place. Or when our volunteers come with a dozen bags of groceries for a half a dozen homes within a few blocks,
right,
that is much more efficient than those half a dozen people each individually driving some miles to a food program.
Mm-hmm.
And when you multiply that by you know, the Cleveland Food Bank has 450 agencies. So when you multiply that efficiency, it's not a small impact. You know, delivery alone is a great idea as far as emergency food distribution. You know, besides the other aspects of our program, bringing very diverse people together and, you know, all the other parts of it, the delivery aspect of it is so important.
Right. Now, when you do fundraising, do you actually have a stipend that you can give to your volunteers to cover the gas? Or is that something that they...
That's part of their donation. You know, I mean, again, another program certainly could institute that. You know, I'm sure, you know, fortunately, none of our volunteers has ever even asked. And it's not so many miles that they're driving. But, you know, they can certainly deduct the use of their vehicle on their taxes. But, you know, we don't offer it. We do insure ourselves for their vehicles used by our program but not owned by us. We do have an insurance policy, but we haven't offered anybody money for their fuel, and that has been, you know, part of volunteers' donations, is that they use their vehicles and they use their fuel.
Right. Yeah, I'm just thinking for some of the young people that I get it, you know, they have time, but they're really, they can't find jobs either. You know, we're coming from the suburbs into Queens.
Yeah.
You know, my mind's just working. I'm thinking for some of those kids, who are just out of college, who can't find work but have time.
That could be an adaptation. I mean, certainly part of your budget could go towards refunding the fuel costs, you know, to your volunteers.
Right.
You know, our program really has kept flexibility and adaptability as, you know, its keynotes. You know, we want to make sure that we're not stiff and we're not unchanging. We change as we need to. And, you know, if you're doing it in Queens, then it's going to be different than doing it in Cleveland. And, you know, if you're doing it with your Catholic parish, it's going to be different than doing it with your synagogue. You know, if you're trying to do an interreligious organization like ours, it's going to be different. But, you know, the fact of the matter is there are millions of people who need our help, and that number is growing and growing with the graying of the baby boom again. And it's, you know, these seniors, they're retiring into poverty, and people are living a long time now, especially the women. And it could be, you know, if they're lucky, they're going to be in poverty for 30 or 40 years. I have a client who's 85 who every month complains to me that no one will hire her. She puts on her makeup, she does her hair, she goes to interviews, and they don't call back.
You know,
she wants to work, but all she's probably ever going to have is Social Security. And I got to say, you know, both parties are looking at that as, you know, as a cash cow to slay.
Yeah.
So I don't see Social Security increasing. I see it receding.
Right. Right. So, you know, it's a scary thought, because I think many of us will be, like you said, you know, even those of us that might be okay now and make $100,000 a year, but we're spending $120,000 or spending the whole $100,000, so you're not ending up with, you're not putting away a lot. And, you know, it's very possible that you can find yourself living off of the Social Security, and it's not going to be enough, and you're going to find yourself in that place.
And the thing is our service area is in the outer ring suburbs of Cleveland and a couple of the southwest neighborhoods of Cleveland, which have historically been outside the culture of poverty, where there are certainly parts of Cleveland where there's been intergenerational poverty, and people go to the church that their grandmother went to get food, you know. Our program is mostly serving people who they never imagined that they would be having a stranger come by with groceries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they thought, you know, wow, I made it out of Ukraine, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's always going to be good. Or, you know, my husband, you know, passed away, but I got $600 Social Security and his $300 pension. And it's like, gee, I'm almost a thousandaire, you know, like
right.
Easy Street. And it's incredible that those folks are forgotten. When we're,
right.
When you hear
now, can people
the
be recipients
now,
of your program End of Meals and Wheels or...
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The thing, you know, the thing with Meals on Wheels, God bless them, but what a lot of our clients find with Meals on Wheels is that they don't want a Salisbury steak today, or they don't want a chicken fried steak today, or, you know, they think, wow, this is, you know, $50 a month. Well, when you're budgeting your $900 a month or your $800 a month, $50 a month is a lot. They're just going to pass on that. I can't tell you how many clients I've had tell me that they're not going to the senior center to pay a dollar for lunch because the bus is $1.50 each direction, and by then it's $4. So who can afford that? Forget it. You know, because this is the reality that people live in, and it's just hard for a lot of people to imagine. And in the neighborhoods we go to, a lot of these people live right next door to people who, you know, they're trying to decide, you know, should we go to Disney World or should we go to Disneyland, or, you know, should we go to France or should we go to Italy, or, and they're, you know, suffering in their wealth, and these folks are right next door, and they, you know, they're thinking, well, you know, my thyroid's not as bad as my liver, so I'll skip the thyroid medicine and I'll buy the liver medicine, you know. Or they think, well, if I put a blanket up in the hall here, then I could just heat the kitchen and I could bring my bed in the kitchen and heat the kitchen, you know. And again, these are people who, you know, they worked at Ford or they worked, you know, at a steel, or their husbands worked at a steel mill, or, you know, these are people who, again, never imagined that they were going to be asking for help. So I invite anyone, you know, who could use our help or would like for us, you know, to consult with them. They could phone me.
I hear our music coming on. They're kind of like getting ready to tell me off the air. So can you really quickly share with everyone how to get in touch with you again?
Yes. My number at the office is 216-496-4329. You can like us on Facebook, All Faiths Pantry, or you can look at our website at allfaithspantry.org. I like to say faiths is plural and not possessive. There's no apostrophe there.
Okay, perfect.
So thank you so much, Bhavani, and thank you so much for what you do. It's very important, and we all really appreciate it.
Thank you, John, and to you, too. You're really an inspiration, and keep up the good work, and if I get out that way, I will definitely look forward to seeing you.
Okay, likewise. You too.
Thanks. Have a great day.
Bye, and thanks to all your listeners.
Thank you. And to all my listeners, thank you for joining me today on the Progressive Radio Network. It's been another wonderful Wednesday, and I look forward to seeing you next week. Have a great rest of the day.